Summer's hotter weather is finally here, but don't let hair loss also make you sweat. Regrow hair with help from Hims. They provide access to personalized treatment so you can see thicker, fuller hair in just 3 to 6 months. Get started from the comfort of home. Fill out an intake form and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business and sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
Now at Menards, save big money on everything for your next project. With the largest selection of concrete and mortar in stock, we have the right mix specially formulated for your project. View our entire selection of concrete and mortar mixes online or in-store and save big money. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
Hi, folks. This is Ken McCusick. Welcome to Friday Morning GM. And I'm joined today by Spencer Peterson. Voss still working on his restaurant, getting that up and running. Matt Ruff has joined us for some episodes, but Spencer Peterson here to talk about the 53-man roster today. I guess we had a big move in the AFC North we probably ought to discuss briefly before we move on. That's TJ Watt getting re-signed by the Steelers for a whopping $41 million AAV, with $36 million of that guaranteed over 3 years.
Yeah, there's been quite a few large contracts handed out in the last couple of days here around the league, both on the offense and defensive side of the ball. But this one's obviously a little closer to home.
Yeah, it does. It probably does not increase the chance of keeping Adafi Owe, I would think. I think it actually greatly reduces that chance. I think it's a very good thing now they got Mike Green in the draft in terms of the future. They're going to have to scramble for players next year. But I do think that the amount given Watt for the age 31 to 33 seasons is an awful lot of money, an awful lot of money. And I probably would be a little bit, I would have potential buyer's remorse right now if I were a Steelers fan about the about that purchase. It's very hard to get a return above your expectation for this kind of contract.
Honestly, that's a lot of money for any set of age seasons any position other than quarterback. So even if he was in his 27, 28, 29 seasons, that would be a lot of money. So.
Right. All right. Well, that move in the division, it's done now. And hopefully the last two games of dominance the Ravens had over Watt, where he had no sacks or quarterback hits in the last two games. Rosengarten played pretty well in aggregate in those two games, about a B-plus level in aggregate as I scored it over those two games combined. So very good news for the Ravens from that perspective, at least. But we're here to talk the Ravens roster. Now, we do this at the beginning of camp in a typical year. We'll do it again at the end of the preseason in terms of taking our best guess at the 53. But it's more fun to do it now when there's a lot of roster battles still to happen. There's a few things. There's only really a couple of spots, as I see it, that are up in the air. But we'll start at the quarterback position, where I don't think there's a lot of question about what's going on. I have the Ravens keeping two quarterbacks. Do you have a different two or the same two? What do you have?
I thought about making a joke here, but it's very much the same two. I think this is the chalkiest of all the positions on the roster. Same two. I assume you have Jackson and Rush.
Yes, Jackson and Rush. I do think there's a fairly good chance Leary will hang on the practice squad this year. I don't think there's a big risk he gets taken by anybody else. And I think, you know, knowing the system for a year or two is probably some value to that. Maybe there's some value in trying to make him into a scout team player, although typically a mobile quarterback is more suited to that. But Leary could try and do some of the things they expect the opposition to do in terms of scout team play. Move on. Talk about wide receivers here. How do you have that shaken out?
So pretty sure we're going six here. I think it's a pretty set six. We've got Flowers, Bateman, Hopkins, of course, is the big three. Then Wallace, Walker, and Wester. A lot of W's there on the back end of the group. But I think that's a pretty set one as well.
Yeah, I agree. I think we're one for one on that. Wade would maybe be the seventh guy. Anthony Miller is there. The Ravens have kept a stable of guys who haven't caught a pass in a couple of years on their practice squad. So they had, you know, Miller and Kirkwood and it's another one I'm forgetting, but they had other guys, and then they still went out and got Deontay Johnson and paid for him. And then they brought Sims in, who had a little bit of punt return experience. So they have seemingly a penchant for veterans, which bothers me a little bit in terms of Wade specifically, because I think if he'd shown any ability with a punt return in practice, he would have gotten the role ahead of a player like Sims, because he's certainly shown plenty as a wide receiver in the preseason.
Yeah, absolutely. It is a little concerning about what his future is, given he didn't get that shot. But, you know, when you look at what they have on the roster with the six, you think about the seven and eight guy being Wade and Miller. I don't see a ton of variation there. That I think it's a calculated gamble that you don't take up a roster spot with a seventh wide receiver just to keep him.
I agree. I think that's likely. And six wide receivers, even some teams will tell you that's one too many, and they'll try and go with five, including some Ravens teams in the past. But I think Wester brings the Ravens another element to their game, and in fact, a replacement for Flowers in some ways to take some of that gadget play away from him, as well as return duties.
And you also get some special teams contribution from Wallace and Walker as well. So I think you're pretty comfortable there with six.
Yeah. All right. All there with you. We'll move on to tight end, since this has gone pretty easy. I got four guys. You got four guys, or you got somebody else?
I've got four guys. I'm guessing they're the same as you.
All right. So Andrews, likely Kohler, and included Ricard, a fullback tight end in this group. You wouldn't have to, but he does play a fair amount in line, so it's probably the appropriate place for him as opposed to running back. The danger, obviously, all four of those guys, their contracts are up at the end of 25. They did reportedly make an offer to Likely at $13 million. How would you feel about that per year?
I would be ecstatic at $13 million a year if we could get him at that. I don't think that gets it done. I wouldn't think that's a clearing contract offer, but I would be very happy with that outcome.
Okay. Fair enough. And then, it's certainly possible that Andrews gets a contract. I think it's very likely Ricard is still here in 26, unless he starts to show his age and injuries wear him down to a significant degree this year. And then Kohler is another one. I don't really have a good estimate of his value. I think he could easily be somewhere else next year on a contract that maybe looks similar to the guy who went to the Vikings a couple of years ago, Oliver, right?
Yeah, Josh Oliver.
Yeah. And we did not see that coming in terms of the total dollar value.
No, not one bit. I do think Kohler could be a guy that surprises a lot of people and gets the Boyle-esque extension kind of before everyone else gets re-signed. But, I don't know that I would want it to be at Josh Oliver money. So,
right. Yeah, they've got it. There has to be a level at which they say no. And, no matter what they have a fair amount of rebuilding at the position they have to do with a young player. Mitchell, Payton, and Pitts are the next guys, and neither of them has any kind of real background of playing football for at any kind of level. Pitts played, a D3, I guess? It was Minnesota Duluth or something he played at. And Mitchell Payton, I think he might still be an IPPP exemption player. I might be wrong about that.
Do they have multiple?
They got one ready to go on Ajabo. Was there another guy that has it currently?
I think Okoye has one as well.
Yes. Yeah, I think you're right too. And I think they only get one, but it may only be you get one on the, to extend the practice squad when that happens. They've got to take spots on the 90 now, but they just have cleared people like Okoye and but I'm not sure about Mitchell Payton, whether he's IPPP or not.
Yeah, I mean, I think the bottom line there is not a lot exciting outside of this top four. And, you know, when you look to 2026 and beyond, I don't think you're penciling them in to absorb any of those departures.
No, I would agree with that. And Mitchell Payton, just right now, Zaire Mitchell Payton is 6'5", 257, and still a first-year player, which means he has no NFL experience. I think he's probably got more of what the team would expect as a blocker than Sam Pitts, who's a little bit leaner and taller. So we'll see how that plays out this summer. It'd be interesting to see them both play a little bit. Let's move on to the running back position. I did see one other depth chart that had Rasheen Ali as the third running back for the Ravens. I've got it a little bit differently. How about you?
I do as well. I have them kind of at my baseline 53. I've got three running backs being Henry, Hill, and Mitchell. Mm-hmm. I do have an asterisk on my list next to Ali because, and maybe we'll come back to this in a moment. You know, there could be something with that 25th spot, depending what happens with injuries at other positions going into the season, that a fourth running back could be where they put that.
Yeah, I agree. That's certainly a possibility. Ali did a little bit of kick returning. There'll be an emphasis on kick returning this year. It could be they want two guys doing that. Mitchell and Ali together would be a pretty formidable duo. And since, you know, the kicking team does have the opportunity to choose like half the field, they can put you in a position where your lesser guy is the return man and you want it to be somebody still pretty good. So we'll see how that plays out. But Ali is a potential to make the team, but I think he's a long shot right now. And I think it's more likely that they go for a 10th player on the offensive line for reasons we'll get into in just a moment here. But let me ask you a question. In terms of Henry, Mitchell, and Hill, if you had to divide out the touches, not just the carries, but the touches among those players, how would you divide it out maybe percentage-wise? I got to do a little math here myself and come up with an estimate.
Yeah, off the bat, without doing the math myself of the touch breakdown from last year, I'd say probably about 65 to 70% Henry, 25% Hill, 10% Mitchell, 10 to 15% Mitchell.
Okay. It's fairly close. I think you might've gone over 100% there, but that's okay. I said 70% for Henry, 18% for Mitchell, and 12% for Hill. But the more I think about it, the more I think it's probably more likely 18 and 12 Hill and Mitchell, since we see more of Hill as a receiver this last year. Mm-hmm. Mitchell's been terrific, by the way, as a receiver. He's great, you know, receiver of the ball in space. So if they used him more as kind of a flanker, I think he could see more touches than a Hill might in a fairly limited set of snaps as well.
Yeah, the big wild card there, I think, is how involved they get Mitchell in the offense and in what variety of ways. If he is giving a little bit more of a gadget role, you know, doing some end around stuff and a couple other ways that he could get involved in the offense, that I don't know that takes up, you know, an additional 10% of the touches, but that is a little bit of a wild card in how that gets split out.
Yeah, I'm going to say this about when you watch camp, OTAs, whatever you watch, there's not very much you can truly tell about running backs, about how effective they're going to be against live fire, because they do not face it at this time of year. You don't even push a running back down from behind. That's considered something you have to apologize to your teammate for. But you don't make it's non-contact football they're playing right now. That said, Mitchell looks unbelievably quick and shifty again, which I'm very excited about. And if Mitchell were to be anything like he was in 23, I think that there's going to be a natural fairly dramatic shift in carry percentage between Hill to him.
Yeah, if he looks at all like he did in 2023 before going down with the injury, that is, yeah. I'll just say this is a roster I'm already very excited about, and I'm not underwriting 2023 Keaton Mitchell in that, And if he shows any of that, I go from very excited to incredibly excited.
All right. Very good. I'm not familiar with the use of the term underwriting in that regard, but that's okay. We're good. I understand, I think, what you meant by it. Let's move on to the offensive line. Talk about the guys there. And we got some news today that Emory Jones went on NFI. Now, this is a very interesting and potentially dramatically impactful move for the Ravens, who may get an extra year of extended on Emory Jones's deal. But apparently, what it must mean is the injury happened after his last game at LSU. Then he had some sort of off-field injury to that shoulder. I think the Ravens have already decided he's not going to make camp. They may, you know, he may only be on NFI for a short period of time if he's ready to go, but he could also be on NFI for the entire year and go the Voorhees route as opposed to the, what I'll call the Ajabo route, which really didn't work out for the Ravens. The Ravens, they had a chance to NFI him for the whole year. They decided to bring him back, and they just, all they did was waste a year of his initial contract.
Yeah. I don't know that there was anything specifically reported on it, or I missed it at the time, but I was always under the assumption that Jones's injury was somehow football related. I don't think there was much discussion about that potentially being an NFI-able injury at the time. And I may be misremembering there, but I did have him marked as, you know, there's sort of a source of flex here in the roster, given his injury, that, you know, he was clearly penciled in to be a part of the 53, given his draft position, pedigree, et cetera. But it makes this what would be a very chalk offensive side of the ball a little more interesting for this discussion.
Right. I agree with that. I think, you know, there's a player who has a big advantage coming out of this. And there's another player who might actually see the field this year. But one of the reasons that I said I went with 10 offensive linemen in this group here is that I don't think Carson Vincent sees the field this year. Well, the second backup offensive tackle was supposed to be Emory Jones this year. You know, they have Joe Noteboom. They brought him in, and I think that he'll be the first guy off the bench if somebody gets hurt. Hopefully it doesn't happen at all, and we're, you know, we don't have anything to talk about. But Joe Noteboom would be first, and then Carson Vincent is probably second now if Emory Jones is unavailable.
Potentially. It depends, I guess, and then there's questions about who would play right tackle, but I know often they like to make the one-for-one move, but it does raise the question, depending, and maybe it depends on the time of the season, you know, early season versus late season, what you've seen, what you're comfortable with. Do they move Roger Rosengarten over to the left side over a Carson Vincent?
I'm fine with that, and I think there's a good possibility Rosengarten might be a left tackle that replaces Stanley for anybody but Noteboom. After I think Noteboom gets the first shot at left tackle. But if, let's say, Rosengarten does move, then who plays right tackle?
Potentially Cleveland, but I think that's why I mentioned that raises the question of who plays right tackle in that situation. So
obviously, if that were to happen, that creates a lot of reduces depth on the inside significantly.
You know, any situation where we lose Stanley is not good. I think even regardless of the reverberations at other positions, you know, not something I would be looking forward to, but agreed that after Noteboom, it gets quite questionable.
Okay. All right. So let's go down the list then of 10. I think we're going to have some of the same names here, but Stanley, Rosengarten, Noteboom, and I have Vincent all making the team as tackles. Vincent, if they cut him, they'll lose him. So they have to carry him on the 53. At some point, they could decide they want to IR him. But I think part of the value of having him on the 53 is he actually learns how to play football. He's gotten by with a lot of bad habits due to playing some weaker players. And hopefully this is a case where he can learn the game. He's being very heavily coached right now. I can honestly say that. Then I don't think there's any doubt that Linderbaum, Fa'alele, Voorhees, and Cleveland all make the roster as interior offensive line players. Fa'alele, the incumbent at right guard, Voorhees and Cleveland. We're going to fight it out at left guard, as Warhop has said. I don't know that there's really a fight going on there. For a lot of reasons, the team would be happier with Voorhees winning it because of the tenure remaining. Cleveland might be the better player, and if that's true, then you should want him winning it, particularly if he's going to be gone in a year, and you know you have the possibility of maybe getting a comp pick, the possibility of deciding you want to re-sign him for longer. I mean, it'd be a shame to let him leave town and then all of a sudden be a really good player somewhere else.
Yeah, I think given the runway with Voorhees, I think a couple of the benefits that you just mentioned of if Cleveland works out, whether it be comp pick, whether you bring him back, I wouldn't lean too heavily one way or the other on the contract piece, just because I think either route has benefits in terms of making that decision specifically. It is interesting given that Cleveland's a guy who seems like he's been in Harbaugh's doghouse in the past, had the issues in the offseason, you know, kind of turmoil or tumult in his personal life. And, you know, seems that they're giving him a second chance. It would be bizarre if he's, you know, re-signed to just not get a look. But it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Another point here is that Cleveland is their most versatile lineman right now, which is crazy talk that this has happened. You know, that you go from McCary, who's a five-position player. You could put him in any of the spots and he'd be okay. To Cleveland, who's now has a little bit of experience with some snaps at center in camp, could play, you know, left guard, right guard, and maybe right tackle. As you said earlier, I wouldn't see him at left tackle ever, but I don't think the Ravens need that as long as one of their big three tackles is still ready to go. So it's it boggles the mind. We've gotten to this point where Ben Cleveland is the most versatile lineman. But the point I wanted to make out of this is, that is a reason not to start him at left guard, is if you want him as a sixth man and you want him to have the trump card who can fix one problem for you, he could be helpful.
Agreed.
All right, we'll move on. Garrett Dellinger. I'm sorry, do I have his first name correctly? Correct. I just always had to make sure. Yeah, Garrett Dellinger.
Yeah.
Guard and occasional. I had a few snaps at center at LSU. A guy who could play the interior guy, I think, is a project for next year. I don't think there's a better option, even though he's a seventh round pick and is not guaranteed anything. They have some guys I have on the outside looking in right now in Bullock and Dalkert and Holsky. Holsky is a guy they're trying out at center some. Those guys, you know, I guess they could win a job away from Dellinger, but it sure looks like a couple things have been said. One was that Warhop was very happy with the LSU linemen and how Brad Davis coaches them. I didn't mention him specifically by name, but he mentioned the school they came from, so it's obvious who he's talking about. And I think that Dellinger is the guy most likely to get a real look as Linderbaum's 2026 replacement if Linderbaum ends up leaving. They just can't come to terms.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I've got Dellinger penciled in as a part of the 53. And I think opposite to what I said about comparing Cleveland Voorhees, I think Dellinger versus Samak, given what you just outlined, the additional year of team control there is incredibly compelling for Dellinger.
Yeah. Yeah. And I wouldn't necessarily have Samak making the roster if I thought Emory Jones is going to be ready for the opener, but my indication would be now that's probably not happening. I think we're more likely to hear Emory Jones is having surgery during the next 2 to 3 weeks than we are likely to hear any positive news about him returning. And if he has surgery, you know, more than likely he'll be gone for the year and we won't see him again. But anyway, shoulder injuries are serious for offensive linemen. That leaves us with a handful of players here who could take that 10th roster spot if you're going to keep 10. And I think this is a team that it probably makes sense. Normally, I 9 would be the magic number, but with Carson Vinson being one of those guys and not expecting him to play in 2025, I think it's 10 you keep.
I largely agree. I don't know that there's anyone I'm super excited about to fill that 10th spot. Mm-hmm. I almost have it as Samak by default.
Mm-hmm.
I think the kind of pivot point or the next most likely person to take the 25th spot on the offense for me would be Ali, but he's not screaming for that in my mind.
Right.
So given what you mentioned about Vinson, I would lean towards an offensive lineman for that 10th spot and most likely Samak almost by default.
Right. Now, one of the things that comes up is you're given an extra roster spot for an 8th offensive lineman every week. So if you don't have at least a 9 to make 8 group available to yourself, you're making a mistake. And offensive linemen suffer a lot of minor injuries and miss games. So you want to have to have nine. You better be nine guys who you're really comfortable playing. And if Vincent is one of the nine, then it makes me less comfortable. So I think they keep a 10th. They could do it with practice squad elevations. They have a couple guys there. Bullock, the guy from Maryland, a guard tackle, Dalcourt, a guy with some experience at center, and might make sense. And Reed Holsky, I wouldn't have had on this list, but he was also specifically pointed out by Warhop as a guy they were going to give chances to at center this camp. And it's interesting because they didn't mention Samak's name. They mentioned Holsky and Dellinger were the two. So we'll see how that plays out. I don't expect Samak to not have any snaps at center. I expect we'll see him some there. I always produced that offensive line grid of who played which series and ends up being how many plays did they get for in the order of entry. I do think we'll see Samak be one of the earlier entrants at center in the preseason games.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so we talked a little bit. So we have basically, it sounds like, the same 25 with a question in your mind a little bit about whether Samak or Ali makes the roster. Now, in which player are you more likely to lose if you cut them both?
I think most likely to lose Ali only because of the going rate or the rate at which running backs get snapped up due to injury, not necessarily because he's the more compelling or more interesting player.
Right.
But Samak is probably one of the least discussed draftees we've ever had. There wasn't a lot of buzz about him. I mean, he's a very late round pick, seemingly out of nowhere. I think he went to Michigan State, but not a lot of fanfare when he's drafted. I just, it hasn't seemed like there's been much buzz or discussion of him even over the last year either. But again, he's probably, I would wait towards keeping Samak over Ali. I think Ali, just given the demand for running backs due to injury, is probably the more likely to get scooped up.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I think the running back size and shape pool is very, very large indeed. It's just be a good athlete and have experience at that position. An awful lot of players do, and a lot of the good athletes gravitate towards the position, even with the going rate on running backs being not that great salary wise and the longevity at the position being not that great. This year, I think maybe a little bit of extra value to have an extra running back around for the kickoff return duties that will have the punitive 35-yard line start point. And Harbaugh at least seems to have decided that that's a good position group to do your kickoff returns, that, you know, we don't need to have wide receivers like a Tylan Wallace might be able to do the thing, but Chris Moore in the past would have been a guy they'd have returning kicks. But under the new system, it's more, Keith Mitchell mentioned this, I think, when he's at the podium, was more like a zone run play. And running backs are just exceptionally qualified to do that kind of work. So it could be something that gets Ali a job specifically. But anyway, 25, 25, and 3 is the typical Ravens roster composition. So essentially, we've got the same guys. I think we'll move over to defense. We'll probably have more differences. But let's move it over to the interior defensive line right now. I've got five. The Ravens have gone with five for several years now. Who do you have?
So kind of the core guys, Madubuike, Jones, then Washington Peebles. Then it gets interesting. So that's four. Slightly leaning right now towards Jenkins over Jones for the fifth defensive lineman. And reason there being, I think he has a little bit of bonus money. Brian McFarland, I don't see that on his page on Russell Street Report, but looking at SpotTrack and a few other places, which aren't always accurate, it's like $300,000 of bonus money, if I'm not really? Mistaken. Hmm. Again, I wanted to go to Brian McFarland's source to confirm that, so I can't say for 100% certainty, but that would tip the scales in my mind towards him being the on the 53.
325 is what I'm seeing here on OTC. So I think that number is probably confirmed. I don't remember that being there before. I remembered a smaller number than that, but it looks like there is some significant money there. Now he's 36 years old, but he's played a lot of snaps the last 2 years for Las Vegas. One of the things you could look to is that he might be a more effective player playing less snaps. I think there's also a significant risk that the Ravens' depth does not hold up at the position through camp. You got, you know, a player like Peebles in particular will probably get a lot of preseason action, and it could very well be the case that he doesn't hold up to it as well as we might hope. I will say that Okoye is a massive, massive human being. I probably have him slightly ahead of Jones at this point right now. We'll see how that plays out. Okoye is an interesting case because I think he played no college ball of any sort. So, yeah, what are we doing? He's actually not listed on the roster currently. Can that be correct? That's interesting. He's not listed on the roster currently. They didn't cut him already, did they?
I didn't think so.
All right. I haven't heard anything, but interesting. Okay. Obviously, I will reverse that if Okoye is not on the roster anymore, but I don't think they've cut him either. I think he's still with the team. Five, you think, for opening day and not six, right?
Yeah, that's where I am right now.
Okay. That's where I am too. It is a position where I kind of always thought it would be a good idea to keep a six, and particularly if you like your six guy, don't put him on the practice squad. Everybody goes to the Ravens practice squad first for defensive alignment anyway. So that'd be a concern to me that wouldn't happen. But right now I see Okoye and Jones both as the likely top of the practice squad guys if the Ravens do decide to go with five again. Let's move over to edge. You know, a very crowded position at this point for the Ravens. How do you see it playing out?
So I have them keeping everyone that's kind of inside track on the roster right now or has a, you know, defined spot on the roster right now. So Adafe Owe, Van Noy, Green, Tavius Robinson, Adisa Isaac, and I have, as of now, David Ajabo sticking around. That said, I think he is probably the top candidate to potentially be dealt at the end of training camp or potentially cut as well. But given what we know right now, I've got him up.
You ever have one of those days where everything's off? Well, Mood can help with that. And let me tell you about Mood. It's the online cannabis brand that is changing the way we handle everything, from stress to sleepless nights, with functional gummies that are 100% federally legal cannabis. Mood launched to make cannabis affordable, accessible, and transparent, while at the same time supporting American farmers growing premium hemp on small pesticide-free farms. Their gummies are next level. Seriously, I've tried a few and each one feels totally different. The Sleepy Time gummies, out like a light, immediately asleep. The Epic Euphoria, it's perfect when you just need a reset to feel good again. What makes them unique? Mood combines THC with herbs and adaptogens, so you get real targeted effects. You're not going to find this in your typical dispensary. And here's the best part. Mood ships discreetly to most states, offers a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, and right now you get 20% off your first order with the promo code RAVEN. Just head to mood.com. Find your perfect gummy and use the code RAVENS at checkout to save 20%.
Summer's hotter weather is finally here, but don't let hair loss also make you sweat. Regrow hair with help from Hims. They provide access to personalized treatment so you can see thicker, fuller hair in just 3 to 6 months. Get started from the comfort of home. Fill out an intake form and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Get everything for your next project at Menards and save big money. We carry everything to help you breathe easier. Allergen air filters help prevent seasonal allergy symptoms and improve your indoor air quality by capturing microparticles while allowing maximum airflow. Save big on allergen air filters when you shop at Menards. View the weekly flyer and all of our great deals happening this week on Menards.com. Save big money
at Menards. As the last guy out of six.
Okay. All right. If they kept six, that would be a big difference. One of the things you do is you hurt your special teams if you do that, but you don't have to have Ajabo active every week. But then once you're at that point with a player and he's not going to be even active on game day, because Adisa Isaac can play special teams and he doesn't really make a big special teams contribution, then you've got a different sort of a problem on your hands. You should be asking yourself the question of why is he still here and should he be traded? I think the chance of him getting the kind of opportunity that would lead to future success with the Ravens is relatively small. And I don't think that that's likely to result in him getting a roster spot. Adisa Isaac may also have limitations as a player. We may see more of it this preseason, that he's just really not ready. But to me right now, Ajabo is the guy who I think is probably on the outs of this group. And I have the Ravens carrying five. I think they'll cut bait on Ajabo at the end of camp would be my guess if their other depth holds up. Got one other that's kind of interesting player, Baltimorean Malik Ham, is there. Now, very interesting because he's a Sam linebacker. Unfortunately, he spent 2 years on IR, so he's actually lost 2 years of his quote-unquote team control, 2 years of his initial four. He could be put on the practice squad, and then the Ravens would have him as an ERFA next year if they wanted it. He could be on the practice squad just because the Ravens have had problems keeping edges healthy, and that might become a concern. And he's a rare cat that can actually step in at the Sam spot for you if your guys go down. And right now it's Van Noy, and I think Green is the secondary Sam at this point. They've had him playing a little bit on each side during OTA so far. He had a nice interception on a boot play. But it's not clear to me exactly who would be the backup Sam for a significant number of plays if they were to lose Van Noy.
One question on Ham. The team is obviously in the scope or the as far as undrafted free agents go, have actually invested quite a bit in him by stashing him on IR 2 years in a row. It does raise the question if they tried to get him through the practice squad, if some other team says, you know, the Ravens clearly like this guy. They've spent money, IR slots with potential to return. And I think they did even have him actually return from IR, if I'm not mistaken, 1 year.
They had him eligible. Practice, and then they didn't.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Reverted him, yeah.
But they've clearly, clearly care about this guy and are trying to keep him around. So it does raise the question if, that would, at least for one team out there, signal, maybe we should give this guy a look if we try to sneak him through.
Yeah, it's not like every player doesn't have something. I mean, I think if they cut Ajabo, he's certainly taken by some other team. And there's others we're going to get to later here that I think are a sure thing. But yeah, Ham, if you're looking at all the players that the Ravens have, I think Ham is a guy that another team might really, that wants a Sam linebacker, might think, yeah, that could work. Yeah. All right, let's move on to the inside linebacker position, which is not the crowded position it was, but I think there are going to be some other people who have a surprise roster spot going here. Who do you have at inside linebacker?
So I have Smith, Simpson, Buchanan, and Hummel as the four. I think I couldn't find room for him. There does seem to be a little bit of energy for Higgins to potentially take a spot. I don't know really what the potential for releasing Hummel would be to make way for Higgins. I don't know from a cap impact. I don't know how much bonus money he has, but also not a great look in terms of attracting. He's not super priority free agent, but it's not not great to bring a guy like that in and just get rid of him. But again, I'm at the four, but was trying to find a way to see if Higgins could sneak on and just couldn't make it work.
Yeah, Jay Higgins, a 480-240 has been the number that's dogged him now since earlier this year in terms of getting drafted and eventually having to go the UDFA route. A lot of people really like him in terms of what he does on the field. And if he shows up in special teams, that'll be one of the real questions. Then he could be a guy that the Ravens keep around because he has some backup inside linebacker value. I think the Ravens, if I had to guess how that ILB room will play out, Simpson will get the first shot at the weak side linebacker role as the incumbent next to Roquan. And Buchanan would be the backup at either spot to start the year. But I do believe that Buchanan, there's probably reason to have him take a fair number of Mike snaps as well as Will snaps during the preseason. I hope he'll get a chance to play both. And that doesn't usually work out that way. Usually they have you play one or the other. They might decide that Higgins is the guy they want at the mic, that he's the guy they want to take the preseason second half snaps, say, after Buchanan and Simpson, say, are done in the first half, and be a guy who would see a lot of mic time. So we'll see how that plays out. I have no idea what their plan is for Jake Hummel beyond special teams, but he did play about 50 snaps last year, I think, on defense with the Rams. Okay, so we're both at 4 on the inside linebacker. You had one more edge, and we're both at 5 on inside linebacker. So I have one more spot to allocate to these final two groups. Let's move on to the corners. I have 6 guys. How are you doing on corners?
I have 6 as well. This is, I think, definitely the most crowded position group to make room for guys who in most years would have a pretty clear spot. But I've got Humphrey, Wiggins, Alexander, Awuzie, Tampa, and Longerbeam as my 6. Given that their relative positioning, roles they play, Kone, want to find a spot for him, but given that I'm already keeping Ajabo, I think 7 cornerbacks just wouldn't work.
Okay. And Armour Davis?
I have him not making it.
Yeah. Fourth year player. I'm in the same position. I got the same guys, by the way. So at outside corner, I had to make a relatively tough choice to go with Tampa over Armour Davis. That's mostly a tenure-based decision. Armour Davis is faster. Tampa has shown, honestly, not a whole lot so far in terms of what he might be able to do at corner. I think there's reason for both players to be raising their hand at right now to say, hey, how about that split field safety role? I think I could play that. And Tampa certainly, either of them has the speed to do it. You got to be the last line of defense as a tackler too, which probably, maybe they're each are a little bit set back in terms of who's the better for that role. But, Armour Davis in particular, I think, with this being the end of his tenure with the Ravens potentially coming in a matter of weeks, really ought to be thinking about versatility. How do I survive in the NFL? And one way you could do that is by taking safety snaps right now.
Yeah, if more so Tampa, if Tampa were to jump over the safety spot, that potentially opens up a slot for Kone here. And again, just given tenure and him having 4 years left ahead of him, mm-hmm. I would still give him the leg up over Armour Davis personally. But the team seems to like Armour Davis, at least in the past. They've expressed in a couple different ways that they like having him around.
Yeah, I agree. Kone... unfortunately is a little bit like Caillou Blue Kelly in terms of his college stats not being particularly impressive. And another guy who up there right around 8 yards per target. And it's not ideal for a draftable player. Kone was in the 26th percentile in terms of yards per target this last year among cornerbacks that met a qualifying number of snaps. And I can't recall exactly what I did with that. But that being the case, I don't think you lose Kone right away. I think Kone is the type of player you lose in November or December as cornerback replacement level attrits downward with the loss of a lot of players for the season.
Yeah. One thing I would just say in response to that, one difference or key difference between Kone and Caillou Blue Kelly in my mind is that while I agree with you in terms of the productivity pass defense productivity metrics not being outstanding for someone who's a draftable prospect, he at least is a positive RAS guy. I think if I remember correctly, Caillou Blue Kelly was also, there was some questions of, okay, the testing's not even great. So what exactly are we doing here? What do we see with this guy? So yeah. Kone does have that going for him at least.
Yeah, he has something else going for him also, and this is in the Mark Andrews and Bilal Kone expectation show, is that Kone played a lot of left corner and right corner in the same games. So I see him playing 35 snaps at right corner and 30 snaps at left corner. What that tells me is he's probably chasing a particular receiver, and given where he was playing, I think he's probably the best corner on the team and was probably chasing the opponent's best receiver. Or at least if he was chasing the second best, he was chasing the second best in order to cover him on an island. And that's going to put you at a disadvantage. In terms of some of the coverage metrics. So I would point to that as a potential. And you're 100% right on the RAS. He's a much better athlete in those terms. I the reason I bring up the coverage metrics and I know everybody wants to look at film, and then that leads to a bunch of evaluator arrogance about people thinking they can see better from a few plays. And I don't buy into that much. What I do buy into is that you can't ignore the coverage metrics, where you do so at your own peril. And we've seen time and time again where the players who corroborate good film with good coverage metrics, they tend to be the outstanding corners of the entire league. Wiggins is that way. He was my number one corner in the draft, and Witherspoon before him was that way. Runaway number one corner in his draft. The players who have one but not the other, they scare me a little bit. You know, people agree on the film. Well, you know, there's some mob mentality out there in terms of agreeing on a draft level for certain players. And then if the statistics say otherwise, you better at least examine them and try and figure out why that doesn't matter.
Well said.
All right. Let's keep moving on here. The safety room is a room where I decided to cheat a little bit, but Washington went to, it's interesting, to PUP today, which I'm not sure if that limits the latest he could return to the team for practice, but it may not be practical anyway. I'm afraid that Washington is probably lost for the season at this point.
Most likely. There was, I think we were talking about it right after it happened, and it's his Achilles, right?
Yeah.
And there, you know, there's some happy talk about a November return, which just seems absurd.
Yeah.
So I assume he's done for the year. I don't know if there's any technical benefit to PUP versus IR now, if that somehow changes what slots you're able to use for who, but I have assumed he's gone the whole year.
Yeah. And he certainly won't practice before the season begins, which means he doesn't get in the way of your non-season ending IR decision-making. He stays on PUP, and then you still would have those two spots to use for non-season ending IR before you get to any handshake deals, which the Ravens may or may not have an opportunity to take this year. I'd have to think about who might be that guy. I thought I'd identified one guy that might be it, but I can't think of who it is right now.
Originally, I thought Jenkins could be one of those guys, but then when I looked into his contract situation, that didn't seem to make a lot of sense.
No, I'm with you. I agree on that. It has to be someone who's a little further down the line in terms of, they have to be a fifth-year player or more. And it's the easiest way is to probably sort the roster that way. But in any case, I don't think the Ravens are going to need more than two if Washington's taking a spot there. If Jones remains on NFI, I believe he can come off. And I don't know what the rules are about him being on the roster. They may need to find him a spot if they plan to take him back. He may take up one of those IR spots. I just honestly don't know the rules with NFI. It's a fairly rare designation in terms of trying to get him in the year. I should know because we had the Ajabo situation and the Voorhees situation the last few years, right?
So the Ajabo one probably more germane to that situation. I think the Voorhees one, he's just gone the whole year. So
yeah,
even though we had it, you wouldn't have gotten into the specifics of how exactly they could return.
Right. No, that's a very good point. So it would have been Ajabo because the plan was there to have him come back in practice. He is the real question. Exactly. So, but of course, the plan may already, if the plan is for Jones to have surgery, then the plan may be to sit him the entire year anyway, in which case he falls into the Voorhees category again. So we'll see how that plays out.
It is interesting, just very quickly on that topic, because he obviously is a third round pick, a later third round pick. Sits closer to Ajabo in draft positioning, but still between Ajabo and Voorhees. You know, mm-hmm. Voorhees is a seventh round pick who likely, had we not picked him, would be undrafted. Didn't really have much say in the matter or much leverage to say, mm-hmm. no, you're not going to NFI me and have me lose a year of service time. Ajabo, on the other hand, probably a little bit more leverage, bargaining power at the time to say, you know, we don't like that plan if that's the way the Ravens wanted to go. Interesting how Jones would react to, you know, the clock being deferred by a year. And that's without knowing all the specifics of how he got injured exactly. And if this is a textbook NFI where he should be losing a year of service time because he did something you know, outside the bounds of his agreement with the team. But it, interesting seeing kind of that edge case in between the two situations.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. I don't know that I put too much stock into the what round they were drafting be the deciding factor. In the end, it's a unilateral decision, I believe, on the club's part. Pat Kerwin always thought about, you know, being that be something he would use punitively when during his time with the Jets. Is slap an NFI designation is the you know, the term, the action verb he uses with it. So it's as in, you know, you want to try that with me, I'll slap an NFI designation on you kind of thing. It is something I believe the club has the decision to make. I don't know what power Jones would have. I don't believe he can re-enter the draft or anything like that at this point. But he potentially could be unhappy, and it could look bad for the Ravens that they, you know, have done this to a player. I think maybe he would have the potential to file a grievance over the thing, but I just don't know.
Yeah, and I'm getting more to the, you know, not wanting to risk them be unhappy. Like the far end of the extreme is you draft a quarterback top five and something happens. You don't want to create an acrimonious relationship early by doing something like that. And that's one far end of the extreme is more what I'm getting at here.
Okay. All right. Well, fair enough. Let's move on. Talk about the safeties. It remains a very thin position from my view. And it certainly is not any beefier with Washington now looking certainly like he's gone for the year. I've got three guys that I think for certain make it. I've got a fourth guy who I think makes it as we set. And I've got a fifth guy who's not on the team currently who I think will make it. So this is how I cheated at the position.
You know, I'm glad you did because it gives us a little bit of variance in our list here at least. Okay. But I've got four. I was +1 on edge with Ajabo. So I've got Hamilton, Starks, Kane and Braid as the four. And this is probably the position that the last spot there, I feel the least strongly about. You know, I want to feel great about it. I'm a Maryland alum, but you know, that's one where you're not on team yet. I could see supplanting Braid in my version of this.
Well, I mean, you know, I'm basically putting Braid on over Ajabo, if you right. think about it, maybe, because I'm saying Mr. Not on team is going to be on the team by the time the year starts. That safety group, they've got guys. I mean, they've got Igbinosin and who's the other one? Keandre Jackson, who have played, you know, college football are you undrafted players this year. It's not like they don't have anybody to play the second half of preseason games, but Kane and Braid are going to get a lot of opportunity to play the back end in preseason and see if either of them can do it. Kane, in very limited view, has made a couple of plays in OTAs. It's nothing I would get excited about because it's not live fire yet. But if he does get in back in there in live fire, we see he can tackle. We see he's in the right position generally. Maybe makes a play or two on the ball. Shows up with good bracketing. Then I get a little bit more excited about that. Even if that occurs, I still think the Ravens need another safety. I think they need another guy to feel secure about having three back end guys in addition to Hamilton that would allow Hamilton to be used other places and still be okay if an injury occurred.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I'm a little, I wouldn't say shocked, but there's part of me that wonders why they haven't brought someone else in. It's a true free safeties are indeed rare, but you know, a split field safety is not the rarest of rare size and shape pools out there. You would think that there is someone they could find that they liked. And I think you keep talking about this in the last draft or two, that is a year one player or whatever the designation might be that they liked at the time that they could bring in. I'm a little surprised they haven't done that yet.
Yeah. And if they want to get this guy to learn the Ravens defense, that has to happen probably before camp starts, because first of all, the live fire he's going to get is going to start with that practice against the Colts, which is, I think, August 5th. The game's on August 7th. So it's fairly early in this entire preseason scheme. And they have another one against the Commanders. The game is 2 weeks later on the 21st and the practice, no, sorry, on the 23rd. But the practice against the Commanders on the 21st, which gives them some more live fire then too. If they wanted to bring in somebody and they thought they had somebody they liked better than Jackson and Igbinosin, then I think they would do that before camp began. I think maybe that guy is still a veteran. I'm not crazy about it. I don't, I don't really like it. Or maybe he's on another team and they're waiting for a cut. But the veteran name that I could bring up that I think would not let the Ravens down in terms of being in the right position is Chuck Clark. I think he should be willing to play for the vet minimum. Guy, obviously very smart guy, ran the defense before when he was here. Would make a lot of sense to bring him back. I have a hard time believing Chuck Clark would not want to play for the vet minimum here. Do you even contend that you might be able to guess at what his feelings might be about coming back and trying for a ring in Baltimore after having made some money with the Jets?
I don't know the interpersonal part of it. I would hope he'd be open to coming back. I don't think it was some terrible, split when he was dealt to the Jets, but I was just checking really quickly. I guess they were a couple years apart. If he ever overlapped with Orr on the team, but I think he was several years after him.
Was Orr's last year 2017? It might've been.
I thought it was 2014.
Oh, was 2014 his last year? No, 2014 and 2016. So they just missed. He might've been, Orr might've been still around the building, like basically as his career was being declared over for the medical condition in 2017. And they might've known each other then. And Orr might've also been a coach at some point when, Clark was on the roster. So it isn't obvious by any stretch that there would be some reason why Orr would be loyal to Clark, but the Ravens organization has, I think, a fairly broad loyalty to Chuck Clark in terms of what kind of a player he is.
Yeah. I mean, I would absolutely be open into it. I think there's a little bit of question of, is that what he wants to do? I would think he would, but I don't know the interpersonal dynamics there. The one guy I was sort of hopeful for, given, and it's always tough because to become available, he has to struggle. And then the question is, he struggled. Do you want him? Was Geno Stone, if he was going to be let go from the Bengals, that was one I would be interested in having a reunion.
Yeah. But it's Geno Stone has some issues as a tackler. The Ravens wouldn't be probably crazy about that, but he certainly was a hell of a ball hawk. And very instinctive safety on the back and exactly what you want in a split field guy. Just didn't have a very good year last year at Cincinnati. And Cincinnati did not cut him as of now, right?
They forced him to take a pay cut.
Oh, really? Okay, good. That's good. I
would rather they have released him and we could grab him, but.
Yeah. So what's he playing for this year? Just to take a quick look at that. So come on, Gino. Are you here? Okay, I'm having some trouble bringing this up, but I'll do this at a later time. So anyway, I think we're there is a question there. I'm not really completely set on Braid. I wouldn't be terribly upset if they got a safety I thought they really could trust, and Kane was their fourth safety. Like it was Clark and Kane. I wouldn't be that upset about it, but it's not a big investment in the future. You're not making a good solid investment in 26. Now you got a young safety you're going to give a lot of money to, and you got Malachi Starks, who's a first round draft pick who hopefully will play every snap at free safety for what, the rest of time roughly. And we're not in the point where we got to be that worried about having a young player, but the third split field safety role is kind of like another role, and it'd be ideal to have a younger player there if you could, given all of the salary demands of the rest of the roster. So if Clark was here, I don't think it would be stable to assume that he'd be here and then he'd be here for another year at the vet minimum. I think it's more likely he'd be here and then either gone for a little bit more money somewhere else or not good enough to earn the vet minimum next year from the Ravens perspective. Somebody also mentioned that Darryl Worley had a halfway decent year this last year with Tennessee. I didn't really look at like PFF grades or anything. I did see it had 52 tackles in and played just 9 games, which is a high tackle total for that. But this can't be right, can it? He's listed now as a linebacker with the Bengals, which is interesting. Because one of the other things that was interesting about Chris Worley is that he's only 29 years old, but if he's listed as a linebacker, he's really moved to that dime position. And that's the move, that's the change they made with Anthony Levine when they finally said, okay, he's not playing on the back end anymore. We're just going to use him at dime. And Dean Pease was the defense coordinator at the time. He goes, oh, he's a linebacker. He's not a safety anymore.
Yeah. Has Darryl Worley signed anywhere? I think he's still a free agent, right?
Well, he's listed on PFF as being with the Bengals here, but if you have something otherwise, that's great.
I am not seeing anything for where he is currently. I think he's currently a free agent, but I could obviously be mistaken. Unless it may be that he's on the 90 man and, you know, isn't being shown as a current member of the team, but I was just gonna say, I would be open to him coming back for some of that split field role. You know, if that was an option.
Okay. So perhaps it is I think he played with Tennessee last year. So let me just get this right. Okay. I might be wrong, because there's another Chris Worley, who's an outside linebacker from Ohio State, who played for the Bengals in 2018, and he wouldn't be around the league anymore. So I think that's where the story's getting crossed. There's a couple of different Chris Worleys.
And, this is Darryl Worley we're talking about, correct?
Darryl Worley, right. Darryl Worley, of course. Okay.
But yeah, multiple Worleys here, at least, is I think where we're getting hung up.
Okay, let me go to Darryl Worley here for a second. This is just, I do not feel good about my my brain function that I'm not able to do that. But I don't have Darryl Worley's current team, whether he's still with the Titans this camp or whether he's a free agent again, which certainly could be true. He got a chance from the Ravens last year and got outplayed by Eddie Jackson in the preseason, at least that were in the in camp. Didn't look that great, honestly. Didn't look that fast or anything. But I tell you what, the year before in 23, Darryl Worley was a preseason demon who extended the Ravens' ability to win football games in the preseason for an extra year by himself.
Yeah, I remember him being in there the, you know, complete second half of a preseason game and just looking like a true NFL vet against guys fighting for roster spots.
Yeah, it's the Ravens' way to sneak one guy onto the field who completely dominates the opposing quarterback in the second half of a preseason game. All right, so specialists, there is a battle going on at kicker right now, so I guess we'll see how that plays out between Hoyland and Loop. Loop, I would say, is probably 80% to win it right now, but not 100. And Hoyland has had some better days than Loop so far, so I guess we'll maybe see that play out to the end. I don't think Stout and Moore that there's any chance either of those guys is gone.
No, I think we have the same exact three here. I've got Loop, Stout, and Moore in as specialists, but that's interesting to hear about the camp battle going on there, but I would imagine it's still heavily weighted towards Loop.
Yes, I would agree. All right. So that brings us to the 53. We had you're 25 on defense. You have a job on the team and not Mr. Not on team, right? No. It's
I believe that's our swap is I've got a job and you have an extra safety to be named later.
Yeah. Safety to be named later. Exactly. Okay. And on the offense, I have Samac as the 10th, and you in the end decided to go with him, but we're both on the fence on Ali, that there could be value there, particularly in a return game, say.
Yeah, I'd say I'm 60% Samac, 30% Ali, 10% other linemen from this group they have.
Yeah, okay. That's a reasonable way to break it up. I love it when people do that and I don't have to ask them, by the way. That's really good. If I had to pick a single dark horse to be on the roster, it'd be either Dalcourt or Hulski, maybe Hulski, given the fact that he's been singled out as getting more playing time. He's a little bit younger than Dalcourt at this point as well, who's been with the team at least for one full year, and it might be two full years in camp prior. So we've got a chance there as well. All right, Spencer, always a pleasure talking football with you. Where can people contact you online if they have a question?
I'm on Twitter X at Spencer CP. That's SpencerCP. And thanks for having me on, Ken.
All right. Always a pleasure. Thank you for making time. Other folks out there, thanks for listening. Like and subscribe if you're watching on YouTube, please. And if you're interested in doing something nice for the show, tell a friend about it first, and also write a 5-star 50-word review if you've got the time to do that. Spencer, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.